So again, good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us in our virtual Florida Community Mindfulness Meditation Hall here on Nebraska Avenue in Tampa, Florida. Looking out today, I am getting used to speaking to an empty hall. I don't know if that's good or bad, but that seems to be what's happening. So this morning, I woke up around 5:30. Usual time, woke, became aware that I was in bed and a new day had begun. Relaxed, set my intentions for the day, got up, went to the bathroom, went into the kitchen, made tea. This morning I made some chai. Spiced Indian tea, came back, sat for a while, went for a walk around a little after 7, started to rain very slightly, quite surprising, and it sort of, I guess the word is drizzled very sweetly for most of the walk. It was quite nice. I came back, showered and shaved, had some breakfast. Up to that moment, all the information, might say, that had come to me had come from my 5 senses: seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and touching, as well as my thoughts. Were in relationship to what I was experiencing directly in front of me. I was peaceful. I was calm. And then, as I've begun to do, after I finished breakfast, before moving on with things, I turned on my computer to look at some sites to see what was going on in the world. Now, when I did that, I left, even though I was using my eyes, I left the world of my 5 senses and direct experience and entered a different world. I entered the world of other people's thoughts, other people's images, other people's ideas. And in the same way that each of us filter our own experience, I entered a world that was totally being filtered by others' experience, picking and choosing not only what to present, but how they packaged it, how they headlined it, how they wrote about it. And so it was a very different world that brought up very different kinds of, or potentially, I should say, could have brought up very different kinds of emotional states, the same way we might say calmness or happiness or ease or clarity are all sort of mind states that we are cultivating. Being with the news clearly was trying to generate different kind of mind states could be generated. And as I said last week, it really depends a lot on who we are historically. If we have been historically a worrier, somebody with anxiety of one degree or another, or a lot of fear, we will read the news in that way, generating that kind of mind state. If historically we tend to the side of kind of blue, sadness, despair, we would read it that way. If it was historically angry, irritation, anger, rage, you know, we might color it that way. Or a mixture of the two. Now, some of you might be wondering, perhaps if you listened last week, you might think, isn't this what Fred said last week? Did I sort of Have I, you know, is this a recorded talk? No. I am just like you. We have the reality of our moment-to-moment life that's unfolding in front of us. And then we have the reality, so-called, that is presented us from others. Historically, that usually was other people, but now, you know, people we knew or something. But, you know, in these last decades or century, more and more, it's people we don't even know. Picking and choosing images and words. But it's very important, my friends, especially now, that we really distinguish clearly that the reality of our lives for each of us unfolds in these moment-to-moment experiences of life. Just close your eyes for a second and take a moment to think about how your morning has unfolded, not in terms of your thoughts, but just in terms of the reality of what you did. You woke up, you got out of bed, you went to the bathroom, you got dressed, you washed your face, you know, you went and made your tea or coffee or breakfast, you interacted with this one, you did that one, you saw this, you heard this, you know. Isn't that all that happened to all of us? Since whenever we woke up this morning, we have had a series of events that have unfolded in the reality of our five senses. Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and sensing. And then there has been another unfolding, the unfolding within our own mind, thoughts, feelings, perceptions. Now, whether this unfolding within our mind has been connected to the reality that's unfolding right in front of us, or is unfolding within our minds from rumination, obsession about the past, worrying about the future, or taking in lots of this other type of information and transforming it through the way we process it. Again, most of us are processing it through our own filters. Historical filters, political filters, social filters, you know, personality filters, historical emotional filters. Please ask yourself, as I look at my morning, was my morning unfolding from what was present right in front of me and my direct experience of life, but was it primarily unfolding within my mind, conditioned by lots of thoughts that are coming from past and future, coming from the cultivation of afflictive mind states, and from over-involvement? In gathering information from external sources. Please, please just reflect on that for a moment. This is important. I explained to you how my morning unfolded. I woke up at 5:30. I didn't turn on my computer till 8:30. Already I was grounded, stable, calm, clear. So when I opened my computer to take the news of the day, that was my foundation. I had a foundation. Please check yourself. When you woke up this morning, did you check your phone right away? Did you check your email, your text? Did you check the news? How did your morning unfold? What were you cultivating? Were you even conscious that all those actions, actions done and actions not done, is what has been conditioning your mind state? And since our mind state is the ruler of our speech and our body, what we've been cultivating in our mind this morning has also probably been conditioning the things we talk about, the way we talk about things, the actions of our body. Please take a moment just to self-reflect. This is important. We need to be able to distinguish. If we can't distinguish, how do we know what to heal and transform? If we don't know where our suffering's coming from, how can we end it? The Buddha's Dharma, the Buddha's Dharma, is about understanding the nature of reality. When we understand the nature of reality, then we can act with intelligence, make wise choices. Know the difference between the wholesome and the unwholesome. You know, the Buddha taught the Dharma, his original Dharma, 2,600 years ago. He taught this basic way of looking at life in the big picture and in the very human picture. Our community spends lots of time in our Dharma talks, in our day-longs, in our intensives, in our retreats, in our mentoring to help our members understand the Buddha Dharma. The Buddha taught the Buddha Dharma to help us, to help liberate us from incorrect view, from distorted thinking, from afflictive emotions. This is what the Buddha taught. And his Dharma that he taught for 50 years, over 2,600 years ago, has continued to this time, being taught by teachers in many different countries. And all those countries over 2,600 years have gone through their changes. There has been peace and there has been war. There has been goodness and there has been evil, we might say. There has been times of fruitful crops and plenty, and times of drought and famine. The rains have come on time and the rains haven't. There have been floods and fires. And there have been epidemics and pandemics. And there has been sickness, old age, and death. So the Buddha's Dharma has always been taught in the context of life as it is. And the Buddhist teachers are always doing their best, based on the Buddha's Dharma, to express it in a way that is helpful and meaningful to whatever the situation is at their time, in their culture, in terms of what's going on. This has not changed. We are not at the end of history yet. Things arise and disappear. Civilizations arise and disappear. Cultures arise and disappear. All human beings arise and they've all disappeared. World systems arise and disappear. This is the nature of things. I'm not much of a scientist, but I seem to remember Something about that when we look up in the night sky and see the stars, because of the nature of time and light, many of the stars actually, in a physical sense, no longer exist. This is the nature of reality. We need to see the big picture so we can deal with clarity, groundedness, fearlessness, openness to whatever reality we are dealing with, including right now with the coronavirus, the virus, the sequestering, the changes in lifestyle, the economic fallout. You know, this is an unfolding situation that is unfolding within the context of the world and its history and its causes and conditions. In every area of life, the political causes and conditions. I mean, I could go on and on. I think you understand what I'm saying. So certainly, you know, we, on a common sense practical level, as human beings in a society, in a community, you know, we respond to things as they are, and so we're responding to the unfolding of this pandemic within our communities, within our country, within the world. In the same way, for those of us who live in Florida, you know, we live with hurricanes. We know the instability that is always present to us, well, at least in the hurricane season, historically. We know they come and they go. Sometimes they come and go with great strength, and sometimes they don't. Sometimes they look strong, and then they peter out. Sometimes they look weak, and then they strengthen. Sometimes they're coming right for us. Sometimes they veer at the last minute and go somewhere else. But those of us who live in Florida, we know that this is the nature of life here. And so we deal with it. We prepare. We listen to what the experts are telling us to do when we know it's coming. We store food. We get our evacuation plan. We, you know, hunker down. We do the right thing. And yet we know that that's all we have control over. We don't have control over the hurricane. It has its own causes and conditions. From the virus's point of view, and I am certainly not a scientist, the virus has its own causes and conditions. How it moves, how it lives, how it feeds. I don't know if I'm using the right terminology, forgive me. All we have control over is our behavior. But our behavior, our actions, are unfolding within the context of this virus that is moving the way it moves. So, when I spoke, I think 3 or 4 weeks ago, I shared with you the three fierce mantras, offering that as a very powerful practice for these unstable, unknowing times. When I spoke here last week, I focused on the five remembrances, these ancient teachings that remind us of the impermanence, instability of the world, and especially in the case of the five remembrances of our own body. it is said, when everything is going well in the world, everyone looks like a great practitioner. We might say, when everything is going well in our life, we're all great practitioners. We're happy. We're calm. But that statement really lets us know that we really only know how good a practitioner we are when things are not going our way. Right now, things are not going our way. This is the time to find out, really, you know, the depth of our practice, the depth of our commitment to our practice, to the Dharma, to cultivating the wholesome and not cultivating the unwholesome. It's like I said last week, you know, we repeat over and over again the five remembrances. I'm of the nature to get sick. I'm the nature to age and grow old. I'm of the nature to die. Everyone that I love and part of my life I'm going to be separated from. We all know that. We all repeat that until it really happens to us or our loved ones in life. And then many people freak out. Because the teachings have not gotten real yet for us. We haven't taken them to heart. We haven't brought them into the core of our life, of our being. Now, so if we freak out and realize, yeah, I really only got that intellectually, conceptually. Or I got it for everybody else. I never got it for myself or my loved ones. Well, don't despair. You know, now's the time where we have clarity about the level of our practice. And the question only is, what do I do now? Am I going to take the practice to a deeper level, or do I want to give in to fear, despair, anger, confusion, agitation? You know, that's our choice. In the same way, in this pandemic, in terms of what's happened already, and it seems like what's going to be unfolding over the coming days, weeks, months, we don't know what the effects are going to be. This is a test. I always say to people, you know, if we want to know how our Dharma is doing, how our practice is doing, real life is the test. It's wonderful that we have retreats, and it's wonderful that we have intensives, and it's wonderful that we study. It's wonderful that we can talk it. But life is the test. And we are being tested as individuals, as a Sangha, as a community. You know, the test is now. And if you see your habitual mind states resurfacing, fear, anxiety, worry, anger, irritation, despair, sadness, you know, here it is. You know, with this sequestering and being at home more, or being at home most of the time now for many people, if we are fortunate enough, many people, either because they're in professions that are needed, or because, unfortunately, because they are poor, and they have to work, don't have the luxury of working from home. But many of us who are home, people are already reporting, you know, they're aware of their habitual kind of restless, either restless or boredom, you know, that continuum that many people bounce around on. So, all our stuff's going to come up. You know, many of us are around family members or friends or roommates that we often have a break from. Now we don't have a break. Stuff's going to come up. That's good. If we are serious about healing and transformation, we want our stuff to come up. Because when it comes up, we now have an opportunity to see it, to be mindful of it, to decide whether it's wholesome or unwholesome, a mind state to be cultivated or not cultivated, strengthened, weakened, or transformed, or replaced. So this is the opportunity that we are all faced with now. This is the opportunity that has been given us in this time of adversity. Please stop for a moment and just reflect on that. Is that the way you're seeing what's going on now? Is that the way you're seeing all the things that are arising in you now? And again, you know, for many people, wholesome things are arising. That's always the other side of it. More aware of other people. More aware of other people's suffering. More aware that we're all in this together. You know, it's like this shopping craziness. You know, many people are out there just grabbing as much stuff for themselves as they can. Hoarding, I think it's called. And often, the one person who's taking more than they need to hoard is affecting other people, that there may be nothing for them, or very little for them. Are we aware of that? We may not be. When we are fearful, we only think of ourselves. Fear is very narrowing, very constricting. Fear is very self-centered. I only care about what's going to happen to me, or for, you know, what's going to happen to my loved ones. Very narrow, very constricting. We don't care about anybody else when we're afraid. Survival mode. If you have a whole community, a whole culture, a whole country of everybody thinking that way, well, that's why I guess some people think that gun shops are an essential service to be kept open. So again, please just take a moment before we go on and just reflect. Close your eyes and just reflect. What has the last 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks poured out in you? Wholesome and unwholesome. This is very personal, very private. You don't have to publicly disclose. Go in. What has the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks poured out in me? Has it brought out my best or brought out my worst? Or brought out both? Alternating. Take an inventory of these past weeks. Your inner response. Your very private response within your own mind and body to this adversive situation. Has it brought out the best or the worst? Has it brought up a lot of old friends, old parts of yourself? Have some of them come roaring back? Or maybe they've come back with just a moderate voice. But are they back? Has altruism or selfishness been your watchword over these past weeks? Are you really aware as you take this inventory of what of these mind states you would consider wholesome, beneficial, things that you want to cultivate. And by cultivating them, you feel good. You feel happy. You feel calm. You feel at ease. You feel loving. You feel open. You even feel safe, and which produce the opposite. Are you clear? Take a moment to get clear now. As I said a little earlier, several weeks ago when I gave my first talk during the pandemic, I focused on the three fierce mantras. Last week, I focused on the five remembrances. I offered them to the community to support their practice, to reflect on. I hope you've been doing that and using them in these past weeks. If I sit up here and talk blah, 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 Dharma, and everybody bows in and bows out, but nobody practices, then I'm really not helping. I'm here to be helpful. I'm here to offer this ageless Dharma medicine. We might not find a cure or a vaccine for this virus, but there is medicine for the epidemic of delusion and suffering of the mind. I offer the Buddha Dharma as medicine to heal, to make strong. The same way people talk about, people are more prone to suffer, more negative effects from the virus if they already have a compromised immune system. And they're talking about a physical immune system. But many of us have a very compromised mental immune system. It too easily gets infected with disease-like mind states. The Buddha Dharma, in this case the teachings and the meditation practices, help build up our mind immune system. While many of us may not be carriers of the coronavirus, many of us in these past weeks have become carriers of this mind virus. Fortunately, there is medicine that we can take. You can start taking it today. I wanted to, and then I'll take some questions. Today I wanted to bring your attention to, in the Buddhist tradition, especially in the Plum Village Thich Nhat Hanh tradition, I think most of you know that, I won't go into it, are these mind trainings. These kind of guidelines for the actions of our body, speech, and mind, the ethics, we might say. For lay people, there are the five mindfulness trainings. For those who are in the tradition of the Order of Interbeing or aware of the 14 mindfulness trainings, there are the 14. in the five, the fifth one is on nourishment and healing. The sort of analogous one in the 14th, somewhat analogous, is the seventh, dwelling happily in the present moment. It reads, aware that life is available only in the present moment, we are committed to training ourselves to live deeply each moment of daily life. We will try not to lose ourselves in dispersion or to be carried away by regrets about the past, worries about the future, or craving, anger, or jealousy in the present. We will practice mindful breathing to be aware of what is happening in the here and now. We determine to learn the art of mindful living by touching the wondrous, refreshing, and healing elements that are inside us and around us in all situations. In this way, we will be able to cultivate seeds of joy, peace, love, and understanding in ourselves, thus facilitating the work of transformation and healing in our consciousness. We are aware that real happiness depends primarily on our mental attitude and not on external conditions, and that we can live happily in the present moment simply by remembering that we already have more than enough conditions to be happy. So I'm not going to read it again, but I will comment on it. But in for those of you who have access, and everybody has access, if they don't have the books through the computer, these are the 14 mindfulness trainings. They're found on the Plum Village website, I'm sure many other places. And I'm talking about the seventh. Do you hear what is being said to you, to us? Aware that life is available in the present moment only. This moment is the only place that we are alive. If we want to be alive, truly, we have to be alive to the moment as it's unfolding right now. And we are committed to training ourselves to live deeply each moment of daily life. This is our training. Yeah, if you go right now, wow, I don't live my life that way. I'm not aware that I'm alive in the present moment. I'm all over the place. That's okay. Good realization. So from this moment on, begin training. How do you train? Discipline, repetition, you know, over and over again, over and over again, over and over again, leaving, coming back, forgetting, remembering, falling down, picking yourself up. That's called training. This is a training we're undergoing. Training in wakefulness. Training in being alive. Please, please, you know, are you, it says here, we are committed. This is the people who are taking this vow are committed. So I hope if there are people listening who have taken this vow, who are in the Order of Interbeing, or are aspirants for the Order of Interbeing, or have attended recitations of the Interbeing, or have read the book Interbeing and have read these, or will read this, you know, ask yourself, am I committed to this training? I'm committed to not losing myself in dispersion or carried away by regrets about the past, worries about the future, craving, anger, or jealousy in the present. Ask yourself, am I aware that this is what I'm training in? Do I carry this awareness with me throughout the day? When I'm by myself, when I'm with others, loved ones, colleagues, strangers? Have I made this commitment to live a mindful life, to not be lost in dispersion and not cultivate afflictive mind states? Do I know how to practice body breath awareness, mindfulness, or any, whatever your practice is, that when you get dispersed or lost, you know how to bring yourself back? You know how to ground yourself. You know how to stop. Do we know this? Do you know this? Ask yourself, please. If not, now's the time, beginning today, This is our practice. Do I know how to stop? Even though an afflictive mind state, a train of thought, a worry, a drama, a hurt, or, you know, whatever it is, has arisen in my mind, am I aware of it? And am I committed to stopping? Stopping doesn't mean repressing. Stopping means not continuing to feed it. Do something. Hold it in awareness and mindfulness. Do something else. Provide an antidote or an alternative mind state. But to continue to cultivate these afflictive mind states is not the practice that is being suggested here. And again, if you hear these words and you realize, well, my practice is weak, well, that's a good insight. You don't have to castigate yourself for a weak practice. It's just good to know if you have a weak practice. So, noticing I have a weak practice, I am committed today to strengthening it. At the end of the day, before I go to bed, I will evaluate how I did. In the morning when I wake up, I will recommit myself. That's how we practice, over and over. We determine to learn the art of mindful living by touching the wondrous, refreshing, and healing elements that are inside us, around us, in all situations. Cultivating seeds of joy, peace, love, understanding ourselves, facilitating the work of transformation and healing in our consciousness. So when I, in terms of this, so what I shared with you my morning, that's what I was doing. I was living mindfully and very consciously touching things within me and around me that cultivate wholesomeness, that cultivate joy and peace and understanding, right? I just wasn't chilling. If we are practitioners of mindful living, especially in the tradition of Thich Nhat Hanh, this is one of his key teachings about mindful living. We consciously know how to cultivate the wholesome. And if you've been spending these last days and weeks of your lifetime cultivating the unwholesome, this is not the path of mindful living. This is the path of suffering. Please take a moment to reflect on that. And again, you know, you may look good in public. This is not about that. This is about in the privacy of your own mind. This is in the privacy of your own speech, your words. Because our words are ways that we cultivate in others the wholesome, the joyous, the good. So when we are cultivators of the wholesome, we're not just only the cultivators within our own mind, we're also trying to cultivate help for others. I was saying to somebody on the phone yesterday who was, you know, thinking they were helping somebody who had lots of fears and angers by just listening to them. I'm just practicing deep listening. Well, yeah, but by letting them go on and on and on, at the end of that conversation, they may have had a catharsis, you know, that they got it all out, you know, until they have the next call. You know, what when we listen deeply to somebody just going on and on about affliction without in any way trying to help them, are we really helping them? I'm not saying deep listening sometimes and offering your presence can't be very nourishing, but oftentimes it's not. We are just nurturing and supporting somebody's suffering. You know, sometimes just saying to somebody, oh, okay, yeah, you're right. Can you tell me something positive that happened today? I mean, is the sky still above you? Seen any flowers? you know, and even good today. You know, it's like, what do we want to cultivate? Because as it says here, facilitating the work of transformation, healing in our consciousness. In Buddhism, we heal by the cultivation of the wholesome. Healing means becoming whole. Cultivating the wholesome returns our mind to